Welcome to the NFL Project. That's not. Also, come on. What am I doing? Welcome to the Football Project. My name is Lucas Abreu. I'm joined by Vivek Badanwal. How are you doing, Vivek?
I'm doing great, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I've got to get this down. I've got to get the intro down. Eventually I will. We're talking about special teams today.
We are talking about special teams today. That's right. Special teams isn't on the field as much as offense or defense, but it's made up mostly of offensive and defensive players, with the exception of a few people. So there are these specialized players who primarily focus on special teams roles. And on today's episode, we'll take a look at a few of those players, these like niche special teams players, their roles on the team. And those roles are punter, kicker, long snapper, and returner. So in the past 40 years, these positions have evolved a lot. Like, they've gone from like teams just trying to find someone kind of randomly who's on the team, like a lineman or a quarterback who can do these roles, to hyper specialized positions that demand a high level of skill and a high attention to detail. And I think sometimes you don't really notice these positions on the field unless they like royally screw something up. But so much of like the mundane that they do is super important through the course of a game. So we'll follow the same format as we did with offensive and defensive players. You want to run through that for folks?
We'll touch on their main roles and responsibilities. We'll mention a few key traits of each position, and then we'll give an elite example of a current NFL player. And so with that said, we're going to be starting off with punters. I'm going to punt this one off to you.
Oh, well done. That's nice. So when an offense stalls out and isn't close enough to kick a field goal, a punter comes onto the field, and the punter's job is to kick the ball to the other team and force them to start their drive with their backs as close to the opposing end zone as possible. So basically making the other offense have to go as far of a length as possible down the field to score. Some traits that teams look for in a good punter: obviously you got to have a strong leg, but not necessarily just to like kick the ball as far down the field as possible, but also kick the ball as high as possible while still getting distance. Have you heard the phrase hang time before for punters?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, how would you describe that?
I would say the amount of time the ball is in the air for the purpose of getting the kick coverage team down to make the tackle. Because the less time that the ball is in the hands of the returner, the less time that they have to make a play.
Spot on, man. The higher the ball hangs in the air, the longer the punt team has to run down the field and affect the returner who's trying to catch the ball and run with it. Ideally, the punt hangs in the air for more than 4.3 seconds.
Okay.
That's like the golden number for punters, 4.3 seconds. If you can get 4.3 seconds of hang time, that typically gets your punt team enough time to run down the field and cover the punt. But you just don't want it to be high. You're also trying to get distance on it too. So punters are trying to find that balance. They also need to be really accurate with how they kick. So as you know, if a punter kicks the ball into the end zone, the opposing team starts with the ball at the 20-yard line. So punters are trying to kick the ball as close to the opposing end zone as possible without going into the end zone. And it takes a lot of accuracy to kick a ball so it goes right up to the end zone but doesn't cross that line. And the last skill is they need to know how to put spin on a ball. And what I mean by that is more and more punters can kick the ball in such a way that when the ball hits the ground, if they want it to just die and stop advancing there, they know how to put spin on the ball so it does that. If they want the ball to hit the ground and roll for another like 10, 15, 20 yards, they know how to like put spin on the ball to do that. One of the trickiest things punters, I think, have been learning how to do is how to make the ball tougher for returners to catch. Like, it just has a funky spin on it. The elite example that I'm thinking of is this guy named Michael Dixon, who plays for the Seattle Seahawks. He's a pretty interesting punter. He's been elite since his days in college. He played at University of Texas. And a fun fact about him is he was actually the MVP for the Texas Longhorns in their bowl game. And I've never seen a punter win most valuable player for any game, but it speaks to, well, I guess it might speak to how rough of a bowl game that was. Maybe the offense and the defense were both absolutely terrible, and they're like, we just have to give it to the punter. But he actually did a really good job. And part of it was he pinned the other team back multiple times, and he puts like a lot of spin on the ball that guys returning just had a tough time fielding his kicks. But that continued into the NFL. So he was an all-pro punter last year. And I think last year he became the highest paid punter in the NFL also. And then he's been in like top five for net punt yards for the past three seasons. So he's built a reputation as a really good punter. Mm-hmm. He punts a bit in like an unorthodox way. So he grew up in Australia and he was playing rugby and Australian football. And so through that, he's learned a lot of, like, I think people thought it was like really quirky how he used to punt the ball. But I think a lot of other punters have learned, like, this guy knows what he's doing and have tried to mimic and learn from him in terms of how he kicks a football, because a lot of the skills he learned from his days of playing Australian football and rugby have really translated to making him a really good punter in the NFL.
I feel like I've seen a lot of players recently in the NFL come from Australia. Why do you think that they've made such great punters? Is it because of the physicality of the game they can tackle as well? Or is it just purely kick style?
You know, I don't know how many NFL teams are asking their punters to like run down the field and make a tackle. They might be a little bit more physical or a little bit more fit than some of the classic punters you see here. But I think a lot of it has to do with the kicking mechanics that they learn in those games of rugby and Australian football that are a little bit different than the NFL. And I think it's given them some extra tools in their toolbox to how to manipulate the ball when they kick it. And so of all the positions, I think punter is definitely one that has evolved quite a bit over the past 20 years or so.
And so obviously punters punt, kickers kick.
Yep.
I just don't feel like I understand the need for two different players. So maybe can you like talk me through why it's important to have one person who punts, one person who kicks? Because when I'm watching the game, it feels like they kind of just do the same thing. Obviously, they have very different roles and responsibilities practically, but mechanically, it feels pretty similar.
Dude, such a good question. Yeah, watching from home, it definitely looks like, oh yeah, they're just kicking a football. Like, why do you need two different people to kick a football? The reality of it is the mechanics that go into kicking a football for like a field goal or extra point are very different than the mechanics that go into kicking a football when you're punting. So first thing is, as a punter, you're catching the ball and then you're holding it as you kick it. And then as a kicker, the ball is placed down on the ground. So mechanically, those things are different. And then the amount of time it takes to practice, like the whole operation of field goal and punt, like with the rest of the punt team or the rest of the field goal team, it takes quite a bit of time to get those things down. And it's a different style of kicking. So there was an era of football where it was just the same person who did all the kicking duties. But I think the more complex it's become to punt a football or kick a football to get it down to a science, the more teams have seen like, hey, this is really worth investing in having someone who specializes on just kicking in this specific way. Let me try and explain a little bit of like what the kickers do. And I think maybe you'll like start to pick up some of the differences between a kicker and a punter. So Kickers typically do kickoffs for the same reason that the ball starts on the ground, right? So they're not having to hold the ball and punt it off. And then they typically kick field goals or extra points. And to give you an idea of like how kickers can impact the game, I've got a question for you. So we talked about on the offensive episode how quarterbacks are the most important position in football because they control the ball so much and they score a ton of points. So taking quarterbacks out, if you consider which players have scored the most amount of points in NFL history, not counting quarterbacks, but counting every other position, so running backs, receivers, tight ends, kickers, how many kickers do you think are in the top 10 of scoring in NFL history?
Probably like two or three.
There are 10 kickers who are top 10 in NFL scoring history. Okay, let me ask you.
Okay.
Top 25, how many kickers do you think
there are? I'm going to guess 25.
You're right. There are 25 kickers who are top 25 scoring. Top 50, how many do you think are kickers?
I'm going to say 48.
Very close. 49.
Okay.
49. The one player who isn't is Jerry Rice.
Yeah,
if you don't know who Jerry Rice is, he's arguably the greatest receiver of all time. And that's not necessarily like that example is not to like say like, oh, kickers are the most important position on the field after quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. Kickers tend to, you know, have longer careers because they don't get injured as much as the other positions on the field, and they tend to have multiple opportunities to kick for points in a game. But the point I'm trying to make is simply this: for as infrequently as kickers are on the football field, in the moments that they have a major impact on the game. And so it's why more and more teams have been drafting kickers in the NFL, and why it's like, oh, we don't want just the same guy who's punting to be the same guy who's kicking, because we want the guy who's kicking to really know how to kick well, like in every circumstance and element.
Yeah.
So traits that you need as a kicker: need to have a strong leg also. Distance wise, for like an NFL kick, you're expected to be able to kick definitely over 50-yard field goals and be right on the cusp of being able to make 60-yard field goals. Accuracy obviously is important, but the expectation or the bar has raised quite a bit with accuracy. Now, it's like every kicker is expected to make every kick that's 40 yards or less. Like if you miss a kick that's under 40 yards, it's like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I think honestly, like you could say even under 50 yards, people are like, you should make that kick. Quite honestly, like I think there's a lot of college kickers who have really strong legs and are really accurate. There's not a shortage of folks who have strong legs and are really accurate. But I feel like every year in the NFL, there's always kickers that are getting cut like midseason. Like if they miss two or three kicks, like teams move on from them. So I think maybe the biggest trait that's needed is consistency. Like regardless of the pressure that's on them, regardless of the moment of the game, regardless of the weather, you're expected to make these kicks when the game's on the line or if they're under 50 yards. And that's really tough to do. Like I think kickers sometimes get ignored because they don't do a lot of the other elements of football. But I just want to take a moment to just appreciate, like, man, they have a pretty tough job. And here's an example that paints how difficult it is to be consistent. So it takes time to develop consistency at the NFL level, like to get used to kicking these like high pressure kicks in these moments. In the past 10 years, there have been 15 kickers drafted, not counting like the kickers drafted last year. So in 10 years, there's been 15 kickers drafted. Of those 15, 12 of them were cut by the team that drafted them.
Wow.
So it's just like right away, it's like that's a 20% success rate on kickers being drafted, which is like super low. But then you take a look at like the 12 guys who got cut by the team that drafted them. And here are some of the names of those guys: Matt Gay, Daniel Carlson, Harrison Butker, Jake Elliott, and Dustin Hopkins. Do those names sound familiar for you at all or meh?
Yeah, no, they all do. They all do.
All those guys are really good. I think Daniel Carlson just got paid as like one of the highest paid kickers in the NFL.
For the Raiders, right?
Yeah, for the Raiders. And so like, I think it just goes to show, like, I think for a lot of kickers, they just need a place that's going to believe in them and give them an opportunity. And if it's not working out somewhere, maybe they just need a fresh start to just go somewhere else. Cause it's hard to recover. Maybe like we've all watched a game where it's like a kicker misses one kick and they misses another kick and they misses another kick. And you're like, oh man, I don't know if he's going to be able to just psychologically get up, bounce back from that. He just needs a fresh start. And I think that's been the case for a lot of these kickers who have been drafted. So I think the NFL is still trying to figure out what makes a good kicker from like a consistency standpoint.
Yeah.
The other two seem obvious, like strong leg, accurate leg. You can see that, but that's the trickiest part. So,
and what's so tough too, I feel like, is there's only 32 starting positions.
Yep.
Like quarterbacks, right? There's like 60 to 90 of them because each team has two or three on the roster. Mm-hmm. Receivers have like five spots on each team. And so with kickers, mm-hmm. yeah, I don't know. It's just, you're so easily replaceable, mm-hmm. and there are so few opportunities to actually start and like have a team believe in you and trust you.
Yeah.
Despite missing.
Yeah. Yep. And the bar has gotten so much higher too. Where back in the 80s or 90s, if you made, I don't know, 75 to 80% of your kicks, you're like, wow, that's really good. Yeah. Now the expectation is like, you got to make it like 90% of your kicks. That's like kind of like the expectation.
I've got a feeling I know who your elite player is. And I think that this guy has ruined the kicking position because of how unrealistic the expectations are. Mm-hmm. And I assume it's Justin Tucker.
It is Justin Tucker. Why? Yeah. Tell the people why Justin Tucker is an elite example.
Because he walks onto the field and you know it's 3 points. Like, yep. it's just like, it's inevitable. It's insane. It's so frustrating.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's spot on. Yeah. He's automatic. It's seemingly automatic. When you talk about having a strong leg, he has the NFL record for the longest field goal in NFL history at 66 yards. When you talk about accuracy, he has the NFL record for the most accurate field goal kicker of all time at 90.2%. And for most of his career, he's just been the epitome of consistency. Like you said, he has reset the standard for kickers in NFL. And I think every team out there is kind of searching and looking for that next Justin Tucker. And I think that's what's led to like teams drafting kickers in like the second round or third round or fourth round. They're hoping. The ironic part is Justin Tucker was undrafted and he's become one of the best kickers in the NFL. So
yeah, that makes sense. Also from Texas.
Also from Texas. Hook him.
Yeah. Austin's doing something right. At least
something in the special teams water down there.
Yeah. And so kickers, obviously, they kick the ball. Like you said earlier, it's on the ground and someone's holding it.
Yeah.
This is, it's a place, no, play, kick placeholder. Placeholder, kicker, no.
You can just say holder. That's fine. Yeah, they just hold the ball.
Amazing. Okay, so they hold the ball. What? Why? I feel like I used to see like Tony Romo holding it, or punters for whatever reason.
Yep.
What is their roles and their responsibilities when it comes to, what their job is on the field?
Yeah. You kind of see it. There's more that goes into it, but the ball gets snapped back to them. They hold it. They put it down on the ground and it gets kicked. When you're just like thinking about that, it's like, oh, anyone can do that. Like, why do you have to have like a special designation for someone to do that? It used to be primarily quarterbacks that would be the holder. And the thought processes was, oh, they handle the ball pretty regularly. And if something goes wrong with the snap, they can get up and they can throw it to somebody. And so you'd have guys like, all these guys in the Hall of Fame, these quarterbacks like Bart Starr and Joe Theismann and Joe Montana, they were all holders like back in the day. Now, sometimes it's a backup quarterback, but more often these days it's the punter, because teams don't want their quarterbacks to miss practice with the offense to be holding. And on the flip side, the hold is so crucial to the kick operation that they want someone who's able to practice that full time. So you mentioned Tony Romo, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Tony Romo, great commentator. Like, I love watching him cover games. I think he has a lot of really cool insights. But one of the plays that he's like sadly most remembered for is a playoff game. He played for the Cowboys. They're driving. They're about to kick the winning field goal. And it's like a chip shot. It's like a, I forget, like maybe a 30-yard field goal or something. And he'd been the holder the entire year for the Cowboys, but he hadn't been the starting quarterback. The starting quarterback got hurt early in the year. And so Tony Romo became the starting quarterback and played phenomenally. And he was also the holder, but now he was splitting his reps at practice. Not like an even 50-50 split, but he was spending way more time practicing offense and not much time as a holder. And so in that game, to win the game, ball gets snapped back and Tony fumbles the hold. And he gets up and he tries to run with it and he doesn't pick up the first down and the Cowboys lose the game. And it's sad that that's like become like one of the things that people remember most about him, because what gets lost is that he wasn't practicing holding nearly as much as before. And I'm sure he'd tell you like, hey, I should have caught the snap still and I should have put the ball down in time and cleanly. But I think it paints a picture of how much practice it takes to do it in a clean and efficient way. So here's the things that like a holder's got to do. When they catch the snap, they have to quickly place the ball down at a precise point. Like, I'm talking like 1 inch by 1 inch square of where they're trying to put this ball down, where the kicker wants it. Then they have to put like a precise tilt to it, like perfectly how the kicker wants it placed. And then I think the one that's more famously known is like, you want to have the laces facing away from the kicker's foot.
Yeah.
Reason for that is the laces are the softest part of the ball. So like when you kick on the laces, the ball compresses even more and the ball kind of goes off the foot a little differently. So have you ever like watched a kick and like the kicker just misses it? So like, it's like 10 yards to the left of the like, right, goalpost or something. You're like, what in the world just happened? Chances are the laces weren't facing the right way because the ball just goes off the foot differently than the kicker was maybe expecting it to. So ideally, you never notice the holder. Like, ideally, if the holder gets mentioned by the commentator in a game, it's usually a bad
something
thing.
Something has gone terribly wrong.
Something's gone terribly wrong. I've never heard a commentator be like, man, that hold was immaculate. Let's watch that on replay. Like, no one ever like does that. Like, an example of a elite holder, I'll be honest with you, man, they don't track that stuff. I have no idea like who's an elite holder. I wouldn't know how to critique them. I do know that the whole operation of a kick has to be 1.3 seconds. So from the snap to the kick, you have 1.3 seconds. And the holder is a vital cog in all that happening. So to any of our listeners out there, if you know someone who's an elite holder and you want to give them a shout out, please let us know, because I'm not quite sure who I'd just be, making stuff up if I said someone.
Email us at thefootballprojectpodcast@gmail.com.
Like the plug there. Very nice.
Yeah. And so, again, they hold it, but the ball is received from a long snapper.
Yes.
Right. So now we're working backwards. Mm-hmm. Long snapper is the center for that play.
For that play.
That's about all I know. I feel like Is it normally the center who also is the long snapper, or does it change?
It used to be, but similar to these other positions that we've talked about on special teams, now every team has their own designated long snapper.
Okay.
When you're just watching, you're like, why do you need someone else to basically do the same job that a center does? Like they're basically doing the same thing.
Does it go back to the reps with like the offensive teams and special teams?
Yes. You don't want to take the center away from getting reps with the offense. And on top of that, the mechanics of snapping a ball back to a quarterback are, to say completely different is a little ridiculous, but they're very different than like how you, the mechanics for a long snap. So on a field goal, you're snapping the ball back about 7 yards. But like I said, it's got to be in 1.3 seconds. So you can't just like kind of leisurely snap it back. You've got to like fire it back. And then if it's a punt play, you're snapping it back 15 yards. And so if you're trying to get the punt off, I think they talk about a punt being 2 seconds altogether. And you're wanting to get the ball from the long snapper to the punter in 0.7 seconds. So that's like, you got to fire it back there.
Yeah.
And so the way that a long snapper is snapping the ball, they're getting both hands on it. They're getting both their shoulders into it, but most of their power is coming through their hips. So they're like violently shooting the ball through their, between their legs and using their hips to get velocity. And so that's how like that whole mechanism of snapping is very different than like a normal center. Does that make sense?
Yeah. They're not blocking, are they? If they're putting that much energy towards the snap.
So that's the other thing. I'll just get into the traits then. They also have to block.
Okay, they are.
Which also is pretty tricky.
Okay.
So you need to be able to snap the ball quickly, get it back there in 0.7 seconds. You got to be consistently accurate with your snaps. So what they teach snappers specifically for punts is you got to snap the ball to the hip level of the punter's kicking foot. And so that's like a very specific spot, like the hip of the punter's kicking foot. So if they're left footed, to their left hip, to their if they're right footed, right hip. And then after you've fired your hips back, you've got to get your head up, get your feet under you and fire out and get some kind of block, whether it's a field goal or a punt. You got to get in the way of somebody who's rushing you. And that's hard to do. Like you have all your momentum going backwards and then you have to get your head up and go forwards and like get some sort of block. And if that all wasn't enough, if you're a long snapper on a punt, they're asking you to run down the field and try to make a tackle then on top of that.
Wow. Yeah. Is there an example of an elite long snapper that you've seen recently?
Yeah. So Luke Rhodes plays for the Indianapolis Colts, just became the highest paid long snapper in the NFL. He was an all-pro at long snapper and he came into the NFL as a linebacker.
Okay.
So he is athletic. He gets multiple tackles each year on punts each year, but he does all the things we said. Well, quick and accurate snaps, good blocker, athletic, good tackler for the position. So yeah, Luke Rhodes, I think is more and more the mold of like what teams are looking for at the long snapper spot.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then to kind of cap it all off, then we've got return specialists. There's both punt returns and kick returns. Is there a difference in the roles and responsibilities and traits that you look for? Or is it pretty similar? Because I feel like, as far as I know, on Madden, like someone might be a great punt returner and then an awful kick returner.
Yeah.
Is that like just Madden or is that also translate into the NFL?
So I'm curious about that. Do you notice any difference between who the folks tend to be? Who are the folks who tend to be good at kick return and who are the folks who tend to be good at punt return? Like what seems to differentiate those folks?
Yeah, I feel like kick returners are usually either like running backs, maybe receivers, but a little bit stockier, whereas punt returners are thinner, maybe a little faster, and more downhill speed rather than sideline to sideline agility.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something to be said about what you're describing there. This is totally a generality. Like there's definitely running backs who return kicks and punts. There's definitely receivers who return kicks and punts. But generally speaking, on a kickoff, you're going to have time to field the kick and you're going to have blockers in front of you. And so you're going to have time to catch it and run. And you need some sort of like there's a level of vision you need to follow your blocks and get to where you got to go. For punt, it's pretty different.
It's more open field.
Remember how we talked about how punters have gotten really good at being able to kick a ball and put some sort of spin on it.
Yeah.
That's difficult to catch. So receivers tend to have better hands. They tend to be able to field those a little bit better than maybe a running back there at times. And then to be able to have elite level of quickness to where if you catch it and there's two or three guys coming to tackle you that you can evade them or just pick a side and go. And receivers tend to have more of the traits for punt returners. Running backs tend to have a lot of the traits that you look at for kickoff returners. And again, that's totally generality. Like, there's a lot of receivers who do both and a lot of running backs who do both. But that's how I try to break it down. Some common traits that they both need are, like, I'd say the most important trait is you just got to secure the football. Like, just make the catch and don't fumble. But like, at the end of the day, you're just trying to keep, like, get the ball. Like, the other team just kicked it off to you. Yeah. The worst thing you could do is lose it. And like,
there's nothing more devastating.
Nothing more devastating. Yeah. The other team would get great field position. Everything else is gravy. So you want a guy to have speed and agility and vision, good decision making. And I think there's a level of fearlessness. For those listening, if you listen to Doug Plank on the last episode, he talked about like how intense punt and kickoff used to be. I wonder if, like, with the kickoff rule changes, if there's going to be a level of like intensity again that comes to that. But you've got to be able to like catch a ball no matter what the conditions are. And you might get hit really hard by someone running full speed at you. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
Not everyone wants to be a kick returner and punt returner in the NFL, and rightfully so, if that makes sense.
It does. And so who stands out? Because I feel like we talked about last week too, it's not more recently been an opportunity to make a roster. They kind of just throw people back there. But with the new rule changes, that will probably change. Mm. Who do you feel like is an example of someone who is on the roster because of their ability to return?
Yeah. Rashid Shaheed for the New Orleans Saints is exactly what you described. So he, I don't want to get this wrong. I think he's from Weber State, which, you know, isn't necessarily.
Is it Weber State?
Oh, it's Weber? W-E-B-E-R?
I actually do think it is Weber.
Weber. Okay. Weber State.
Yeah.
Weber State. So, you know, not a football powerhouse necessarily. I don't think even Division One, right? So
I didn't know that they had a football program.
I didn't. Yeah, exactly.
That's where Dame went. So
Dame, look at that. Look, Dame, good company. Him and Rashid together.
Yeah.
So Rashid, electric with the ball in his hands, one of the fastest people in the NFL, really raw as a receiver. It wasn't like he was on the team as a receiver, but he's really grown into that role. Mm. And it's pretty funny. Like, if you see him catching the ball, it's usually because the Saints just told him to just run down the field as fast as you can. They'll throw it up to him. So a lot of his catches are just like big plays like that. The main reason he's on the team, though, is because of what he does in the return game for punt and kick. He was voted to the Pro Bowl last year. He was all pro as a returner. And he's one of the few players who did both kick return and punt return at an elite level. Like, his return averages for kick and punt were both in the top five. So he's a great example of that. And I think he's someone that's going to really benefit from the rule changes to kickoff. I think he's going to have a lot more opportunities to return kicks. And I wouldn't be surprised if he takes a couple of them to the house next year.
That's exciting stuff. That's exciting stuff. So that about covers everything here with special teams. Honestly, like, I think way more insightful than I expected, because again, they're on the field for such a short period of time. It's really interesting hearing about the intricacies of their roles and like how the time that they do spend on the field impacts so much of the rest of the game too.
Yep. And like we were saying, they usually don't get talked about until they like someone screws something up.
Right.
Like, very rarely is it like, wow, did you see what that holder did? Or did you see what that punter did? But I think it speaks to how the bar has been raised for those positions so high to where it's like, no, we expect flawless. You to be elite. Flawless. Yeah. We expect 1.3 seconds from snap to hold to kick. We expect 4.3 seconds of hang time. Like, all those sorts of things are like down to a science. And it's easy to take that stuff for granted when you're watching. So for those listening, you know, I don't expect us to be dialed in on the holder the next time we watch a game, but I think it just gives you a better appreciation for the game and the things that they do and why this takes so much practice for folks to like hone these skills and do these special team skills.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I appreciate you sharing, Vake. If anyone has any questions, they can contact us at thefootballprojectpodcast@gmail.com or the social media links down below. And another great episode in the books.
Let's go, dude. It's been fun getting to do this with you, man.
Yeah, man, this has been a blast. I will, I'll see you later.
All right, see you later.
Okay, can I just say, Jerry Rice being the only person in the top 50 outside of quarterbacks responsible for the most points scored in the NFL, I maybe this is a hot take, put him in the NFL today, and he's like a second string receiver borderline maybe a Pro Bowler. I don't know.
You think so?
I think so. He wasn't fast. He had obviously amazing hands, but like, I feel like Larry Fitzgerald is more known for his hands than anyone else. I don't think that Jerry Rice was the best at any one thing. He was just great at a lot of things. But you put Tyreek Hill in the 80s and the 90s, those records are untouchable. I just don't know. I think that like, it's great. I just had to get that off my chest. Jerry Rice, you know, amazing player and stuff. Respect to him. But I just feel like in the same way, like I love Jim Brown, the late great Jim Brown, who obviously was a Cleveland Brown.
Yeah.
And I think that amazing, but like you put any running back from, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago in the NFL today, and they're just not holding up. I don't know. Maybe that's a hot take. Maybe I'm wrong and I just know nothing, but.
So let me ask you this. What if you gave Jerry Rice the same training resources, the same expertise on coaching and diet and all that sort of stuff, like all the elements that like players have available to them today?
Sure.
And you allowed him to train and play in that. Do you think he's like, I don't know. I think sometimes it's hard to compare eras, right? But do you think that makes a difference? Like if you just plugged in Jerry Rice as he was back then to now, I could see that being trickier. But do you think it changes anything if he has a lot of those resources available to him?
Probably. But again, I feel like I don't know. This is obviously not based on anything outside of pure irrational opinion.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting conversation. So
yeah,
it's always tough. Like it's like, oh yeah, what if you put Jordan in today's NBA? Is he like
he's a bum.
He's a plumber. Get him off the court.
He's not going 6 for 6 in the finals, is all I'm saying.
Yeah. There's just a different style of basketball, right? And it's the same with football, right? Like the brand of football they played in the 80s versus now, completely different.
Yeah.
Like if Jerry Rice was on a team that was throwing it 40 times a game, maybe he gets more stats. If he's playing against defenses that are way more complex and way more suited to attack a West Coast offense, maybe he does worse. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Tough to tell.
Yeah.
If he plays for the Browns and Johnny Manziel is his quarterback, probably doesn't have a good career.
or Johnny is a Pro Bowler because of him.
Wow. He raises the level. Wow. We'll never know.
Also, man, I'm glad that the Chiefs don't do this, but if Pat Mahomes took the snaps for the kicks, just the threat that would be putting Kelsey at the end to block and just like having them there would make you second guess every single kick every time.
It would. But then if you're Kansas City and Pat Mahomes gets injured on a hold, how devastating would that be?
I mean, yeah, you might as well just relocate the franchise at that point.
Yeah. That would be awful. And I don't know, maybe Harrison Butker isn't as good as a kicker for the Chiefs then, because
that's true.
Because his holder is missing. So many missed kicks. It always gets put on the kicker. A lot more of it has to do with the holder and sometimes even the snapper than I think get credit. Like obviously at the end of the day, the kicker is the main part of that kicking equation. But I think the holder and the long snapper have more to do with it than people realize.
No, I agree. And I think that like from a bad snap to a bad hold, there's so many different, and also a bad block. Like, you know, people can just obviously put their hands up or get around the corner and get to the ball in under 1.3 seconds. Mm-hmm. And a great kick would still, it reminds me of the Bears kicker. Was it Cody Parkey?
Yeah.
Who everyone was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he missed the kick. But like, if you look at the replay, it got blocked. And still, even then, he's known for missing that kick. And so that's tough.
Man. Kickers, man. The world loves you when you make the kick, and the world turns on you when you miss a kick. It's just like hot and cold. Yeah.
It's brutal.
Yeah.